He is eat it. He's an expert in that particular field as well. But what he's going to do is he's going to find me the person who is sitting the best. Now, all those people who are texting their friends rather than they're not going to win, right? Yes. So David has got this dairy milk bar, and he's going to give it to the person. Oh, see, Yvonne Scott suddenly put a backstory. He says, spot the people who are from this world. And so David's got this, and he's going to look for the best person. Michelle Wilson, you have no chance. There's no point even trying. It's just, some people are just not capable of sitting still for this length of time. That's not an indication that it's going to be a very long sermon. But I want to start it here. And we're going to weave some vision stuff into the middle of it. And Joey's going to talk in the middle of it. But I want to build it into the backdrop of a story. And so I want to start it here. It came as a bit of a surprise when George walked into the house and said, "Mum, Dad, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to Princeton College." Mum and Dad shook their heads and said, "George, you know we can't do that. It's just not possible. George, you know that we live on this plantation. Your mum and I, we get paid now to be here. Your granddad came here as a slave. You can't read or write, George. There is no way you can be a lawyer. There is no way you can go to Princeton College." George said, "I'm going to do it. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to Princeton College." "But George, you're 12 years of age. You can't read or write." He said, "It's not a problem. I'm going to learn to read and write." And off he went to find the plantation owner's daughter, who at the time was 8. We are using our imaginations a little bit. And the plantation owner's daughter, he said to her, "Can you read and write?" And she said, "Yes, yes, yes." "Is this going well?" She said, "Yes, yes." He said, "Great, I can't. Now, can you teach me to read and write?" Well, she actually said, "George, you need to know that I go to school, but I'm not the teacher. Teachers don't tend to be 8 years of age." He said, "It doesn't matter. All you need to do is every day that you come home, let's sit together outside our house and you can talk to me about what you learned that day." And that's what happened for the next 3 years. She would come home and they'd sit down together and they'd talk about what they'd learned. And she'd say, "We learned about this letter. We learned about this word. We learned about writing these sentences. We learned about these numbers." And over the next 3 years, George eventually learned to read and write. He walked into the family home and said, "Mum, Dad, I can read, I can write, I am going to be a lawyer, I'm going to Princeton College." They said to him, "George, we are so proud of you. Nobody in our family has ever been able to read or write before. But George, we get paid to be here, but it only covers the rent for this house and food to eat. We certainly don't have any more money than that, George. We can't afford for you to go to Princeton College. We can't afford for you to be a lawyer." George was determined. He knew it would never happen if he stayed in his house. So he left home and went to find another job. He got a job in the city, but it didn't matter how hard he worked. He only ever had enough money to feed himself and for a place to live. He wasn't sure what to do until the railroad came to town. The train started to run through. George noticed this was a particular type of train. This particular train ran right away through the United States of America from one coast to the other. People would get on, they would sleep through the night, and in the morning they would get off at their destination. George thought, "If I get a job on that train, then I won't need to find anywhere else to live, and I can keep all the money." And so now George got himself a job on the train. And he would collect tickets, sir. Oh, very good. Now we're getting the hang of it. And he would collect bags. Suitcases mainly. That's hand luggage. And he would show people to their seats, and then he would show people to the restaurant cart, and then he would show people to their sleeping compartment where they would sleep through the night. But no matter how hard he tried, it still wasn't enough money. He still wasn't getting enough to go to Princeton College. He still wasn't able to become the lawyer. He needed another idea. He noticed that the people who were getting on to his train were businessmen. He noticed that they were very smart businessmen, not very smart. We're using our imaginations. Okay. And he noticed the heckling from the front row is a little bit interesting. And he noticed that they were wearing very shiny shoes. And he thought, I know what I'll do. I'll offer to polish shoes. That's it. So I'll add that. I'll collect my tickets, and I'll collect my bags, and I'll show people to where they sleep and to where they eat. But as they get on, I'll also offer to polish shoes. So can I polish your shoes? They are just $1, sir. And those people who were worried about that should be grateful that he didn't decide to iron trousers. That would have been an interesting story, wouldn't it? And so now he's collecting pairs of shoes as the people get onto the train. He's collecting bags. He's showing people to the restaurant. He's showing people where to sleep. And he's now, from midnight till 4 a.m., he's sat in the engine room frantically polishing shoes. So early in the morning, all the shoes are placed once again outside the doors of the people who gave him the shoes. He gets up at 4 a.m. He's up at 4 a.m. He goes to bed at 4 a.m. He sleeps till 6 a.m. He's up again, and he's working again right away through the day till midnight, when he starts to polish shoes. He's sleeping for just 2 hours a night, but he's going to get enough money to go to Princeton College. He's going to get enough money to be a lawyer. One occasion, it's very early hours of the morning, and he's polishing his shoes up in the engine room when a businessman who simply can't sleep, George, has got his shoes. He's polishing them. However, he did notice when he collected this particular businessman's shoes that he wasn't sure these shoes could get any shinier. But he asked, and the man said yes, and he took his dollar, and he's polished and polished and polished, and if anything, they were slightly more shiny. But this businessman can't sleep. Tomorrow, he's got a big deal. He's going to land it. It's running through his head over and over and over, the things that he's going to say in the boardroom. And as he's running it through, he can't sleep. So he gets up, and he goes for a walk up the train. And he comes to the engine room. And he opens the door, and he looks in, and he's about to go when he sees George on the floor, surrounded by dozens and dozens of pairs of shoes. He says to him, who are you? George says, George, I'm George. Who are you? The businessman says, I'm called Mr. Spencer. George says, oh, why are you here, sir? He says, I can't sleep, so I went for a walk. More importantly, George, what are you doing? Do they not pay you? Well, they do, sir, but I'm polishing shoes so I can get enough extra money so that I can go to Princeton College and I can become a lawyer. Why are you up, sir? Mr. Spencer explained again. I couldn't sleep. George said, I know just the thing. I'll make you a milky drink, one like my grandfather showed me how to make. And so George prepares the milky drink, and he puts in the little herbs, and he hands it to Mr. Spencer, who drinks the drink, and oh, it's lovely. And very soon, he's feeling sleepy, and he wanders back to his sleeper compartment, and he goes to sleep, and in the morning, he wakes up, and there's his shoes, shinier than ever. He places them on, and that's the last time George will see Mr. Spencer. Still, he continues his job. Tickets, sir, bags, sirs, this is your seat, sir and madam. Just wanted to be inclusive. And he's doing all these tasks And he does this for 3 years straight. He sleeps 2 hours a night. He works 7 days a week. He works every week of the month, every month of the year, 3 years. And now he sits down at the end of that period of time to count the money. He's kept it with him. And onto the table he pours, oh, what seems to be so many dollar bills. And he begins to count. And he's counting because an 8-year-old girl showed him how. And he counts and he counts and he counts and he writes down the number at the bottom and he looks at it. After 3 years of non-stop effort and work, he looks at it. He has in front of him enough money to go to Princeton College for one whole term. Can't believe it. So he slept 2 hours a night for as long as he can remember now. And he sits there thinking they were right. My mom and dad were right. I should stay where I am. There is no way from here. I should stay with what I'm doing. I can't do it. And in utter despair, he looks down at the money in front of him and doesn't know what to do. He's reached that point of despair. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how he's supposed to respond. Everything he hoped for has just crumbled in front of him. And George sits in hopelessness. I'm going to leave him there. I'm going to end the story for you a little while from now. But for right now, I want you to take you to another place of despair. David, King David, not king yet. He's going to be a king several weeks from now if he gets this bit right. This is King David, 1 Samuel 30. King David has been off hunting. Now he returns. He's come to a place called Ziklag. As he approaches that place called Ziklag, he stops. There is fire welling up into the heavens. You see, there are points in history on which history itself balances. There are points in history where history itself turns. In the Second World War, it was D-Day. In the Falklands conflict, it was the storming of Port Stanley. Those points in history where the whole thing balances. And we're about to hit it for David. Weeks from now, he's going to be king. But if he gets this wrong, he's going back to obscurity. Right now, he's got to choose. Right now, he's going to have to make a decision. He's come back with his men. He's ridden into Ziklag to find that the Amalekites have come to Ziklag first. They've invaded Ziklag. They've taken his wife. They've taken his daughter. They've taken all the possessions. And they've set fire to the whole thing. And David finds himself at Ziklag. Ziklag is the place of testing. Ziklag is the place of temptation. Ziklag is the place where we decide whether we are going forward to kingship or we're returning backwards to obscurity. It all hinges on Ziklag. And so now he's come into Ziklag. His men have looked around. They've seen the devastation, the destruction, the robbery of all the possessions. And David is left in the middle of that. And if that isn't bad enough that he's lost his wife, his children,
all his stuff. If that's not bad enough, those men, the ones who were in despair, those who were despised, the ones he'd gathered to himself, now flock around and discuss the best way to kill David. They're going to throw stones at him. Look at my stone. This is a pretty good stone. I could drop this on his head. He would be dead. David is at Ziklag. Ziklag is the place of decision, the place of choice, the place of testing. And I believe 2016 Warfield Church is our Ziklag. The place of testing. To decide whether we're going to go on and do incredible things or whether we're going back to obscurity. Our history is good. But right now, we hang in the balance. Phil's word's an interesting word. I have no hesitation in allowing him to share it. We find ourselves at Ziklag. With David on his knees. With people wanting to stone him to death. And there he is. Greatness. Obscurity. It hinges on Ziklag. In your lives, you'll come to Ziklag again and again and again. A choice that you have to make, a decision that you have to make, a place of brokenness. Did he hear that? For the toxicity to get out, there has to be brokenness. And then the consuming fire falls. Did he hear that? And there he is. There he is. And God is saying, David, get up. And David is saying, God, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I've carried these people. I don't think I could do it anymore. David, get up. You see that the whole thing is dependent on David's ability and those around him, their ability to strengthen themselves in the Lord and stand. But God, I don't think I can get up anymore. And we have to build into our lives some things at Ziklag before we can get past it. An honest and open conversation with God needs to take place at Ziklag. God, what do I do? What do I do? We have to pray more. Some honest conversations with God have to happen at Ziklag. We have to learn to worship in the midst of the storm. That's such a gift. David, get up. Oh, but God, I just get knocked back down again. It's just easier if I stay down. And you know this story, right? You've been there. Some of you are there right now in your own personal Ziklag situation where the whole thing is unwinding, unraveling, falling apart on you. Ziklag, get up. But God, your plans are still to prosper. You've not forsaken us. You're with us in the fire and the flood. Get up. Oh God, it's hard to keep getting up. But if we can, then we can do extraordinary things for him. And we have the challenge to get through Ziklag. And this will not be achieved in one service. Some extraordinary things can happen in 2016. But you and I have to get through Ziklag. And so my challenge, Warfield Church, is we have to pray more. We have to talk to Jesus more. We have to learn to worship him in the worst situations. And we have to draw our strength from the Lord because it doesn't come from anywhere else. And if we can build those things into us, as we walk through 2016, then we can walk into what God has for us. If we can't, then we can't. And we call it a day. Siklag. That's where we are. We have to make a choice. We have to make a decision. Oh, it's glorious for David. He gets up. He gathers his troops. He says, God is with us. And they go and do something extraordinary. They go and they fight against the Amalekites. And the Bible says they restore. That's a wonderful, powerful, strong word. They restore. All those children who've drifted off, all those young people who drifted off, all the prodigals, they're restored. But they're restored because people get past Ziklag. He walks in. He's going to become the greatest king in Israel's history outside of King Jesus. Why? Because he gets through Ziklag. It all hangs on Ziklag. Everything is dependent on Ziklag. We have great opportunities coming up in 2016. For a period of time, Chris and Judy Nottage, who are here somewhere, I saw them earlier, but now I can't find them. There they are, have been beginning to do some work in Forest Park. We want to be able to support what they're doing down there. 50 people came to the carol service. So they're going to launch Forest Park Community Church. We want to be able to help them do that, just to work with them out of relationship. Woodhurst Park is coming online from July. We want to be able to respond to that. We want to be able to do something there in that extension of Warfield School that's been built there in Woodhurst Park. We want to be able to respond to that. Now, we don't know how. We met and prayed about it a lot. We talked again this week, and we've made these conclusions. We know that God wants us to do something. We don't know what the something is. It could be a messy church that happens in the afternoon or a service that happens in the evening. Or we could just put a life group in there and try and get ourselves a house. The third thing, we want to do it based around a community pastor. We want to bring somebody in and say, here's the blank sheet. But there's no money for that. So we need to pray and ask God, which grant-giving trusts around us? And will the diocese help us to be able to do that? And establish something there in Woodhurst Park. So there's loads of things which are there in front of us, but they're all dependent, ladies and gentlemen, on our ability to get through Ziklag. And if we can't get through Ziklag, it's all a waste of time anyway. We have to get through here. More things coming in 2016.
Not easy to follow that, is it? One thing that always amazes me about God, though, is we see his grace in the midst of the storm, don't we? His grace is an endless supply to us. And we do see God doing great stuff among us. And for that, we need to always be thankful. And I'm just here to tell you very briefly just about two initiatives that are going on at the moment. The first one is to do with Warfield Park. That is the estate of mobile homes that's off Westmoreland Drive and a bigger area around. There's 1,000 people who live there. And I was reading an article a while back, and it was just saying that evangelism over the last few decades has been all about getting people to come to us, inviting them to our church services, and to come and be what we are. And I look at the example of Jesus in the Gospels, and what I read over and over again is that actually Jesus went out to the people. He went to their villages, he went to their communities, and he built relationships with them. So that's what we are hoping and praying about with Warfield Park. A group of us have been praying for some time about getting links, building bridges with that community. We've been praying, but we've also been trying to go along to their coffee mornings. They have a wonderful community hall. They have a wonderful community there. But we feel there's more for them, that God wants to do more for them. We believe in a God who absolutely passionately loves the people on Warfield Park. And if we can partner with him in bringing his love and his friendship to them, then we want to do that. So we've been praying. We've been going along to the coffee mornings. We're now meeting in a home actually on the park and gathering other Christians who live on the park to come and join us. And we don't know what this is going to look like. What I do know is we don't want to run ahead of God, and we don't want to be the people dictating what it looks like. We want to do what God wants to do on Warfield Park. So that's just one of the exciting adventures that's happening, which I am thrilled about because it is about us fulfilling our commission to go and love other people as God has loved us. And that always has to be at the core of our missionary heart. But also, a number of you will be aware that last summer we piloted a scheme it's difficult to know how to describe them, the more mature members of our congregation. We gave them the name Autumn Stars, those who are retired. We had a scheme because certainly during August, lots of things closed, lots of clubs and activities. And it can be actually a very quiet and lonely time if you are in that particular category. So we thought, well, we'll run a holiday club for our retired folk. And, do you know, we had an absolutely amazing time. They were really up for lots of different activities. We had nail painting, we had craft, we had a quiz. We even had keep fit in your chairs, where someone came in and showed them exercises they can do from their armchairs at home. And it was a fabulous time. And we also had lunch together. And, you know, if you are used to eating lunch by yourself, then actually having lunch around a table with lively conversation is a very precious thing. And so really, I'm just here to tell you that we're hoping to extend that this year to do more days. If any of you would like to come on board with that, if any of you have any skills or talents that you feel could be useful, an interesting topic you could come and talk on, we'd love to hear from you. In the midst of the storm, God is gracious. God is still on the move. God is still doing good things. Thank you.
Oh, trying to rescue this stand. Got it. So we need to pass Ziklag. As you wander out today, everybody will get a vision pack. In it will be the vision booklet of all the things that we want to do through the course of this year. It's an extraordinary amount if we can get through Ziklag. And we've trusted God and upped our game. We've moved from the position. So Warfield Church, what it's done for decades and decades and decades now is it developed this wonderful, thriving parish church, and then from it, after many, many years, it planted a congregation, and then many years after that, another congregation, and then many years after that, and another congregation, and that's called addition. And what I feel that we're moving towards now is called multiplication. But if we're going to multiply what we do, so we're going to do something in Woodhurst Park and Warfield Park and Forest Park, it's quite useful that they're all parks. And we're going to extend our autumn club provision. And we're going to do X and we're going to do Y. And we're going to do all those things. Then we can't just multiply our efforts and multiply our mission. We have to also multiply our finances and our prayer and our ability to sing even in the worst situations. So, Joey's going to come. Fill you in on where we're at in terms of our finances, and then I promise you, I'll tell you what happens to George sat on his chair.
Good morning, everybody. On the way here, John and I took the opportunity to drive past Woodhurst Park. Did anybody else come that way? Does anybody else, when they're going to Wokingham or Reading, have a look what's happening? It's quite interesting, isn't it? I was a bit scared this morning. When those fields were green, it didn't look such a big area. But now they're brown with houses. It's beginning to look pretty huge, isn't it? Well, it looks huge to me. And lots of people are going to be moving to Bracknell this summer. And it got me thinking about when I moved to Bracknell. It was 28 years ago. I wonder when you moved to Bracknell. Is anybody Bracknell born and bred here? There's a few. Thanks for letting me stay. John and I moved to Dashwood Close, actually, just opposite the boot, when we got married. Bracknell wasn't our community. I don't think we really thought about community. We just thought about our lives, and we thought about our friends and our family, which were all around the country. So actually, we spent most of our weekends not in Bracknell. We spent a lot of time trying to escape Bracknell as well, actually, but God had other plans. And then 6 years after we moved here, we took more interest in the word community because we just found out that I was pregnant with our first child. And so we wanted to start thinking about nurseries and schools. Church wasn't still a word that we were thinking about. But our plans never got started because a week after we found out I was pregnant with Katie, we found out that my precious mum had got breast cancer for the third time in 3 years. She'd also had breast cancer when I was 5. John's dad had a brain tumour, and we had already been given the news that actually he was unlikely to last the year. So instead of starting one of the most exciting journeys of our lives, we were plunged into a storm. We were plunged into the worst time of our lives. And my mum died 3 weeks after John's dad. John's godfather died the day after his dad. That was unexpected. I was 5 months pregnant. I was lost. I was numb. It was dark. I was cold. And I didn't know what to do. We were the first of our friends to have parents that died, and they didn't know what to say. It's never easy, is it, to talk to somebody, but the first time you experience it, it's even harder. And so even our best friends would say, how you doing? And we'd go, fine, and we'd move on. And it took a very brave colleague of mine to ring me in that dark landscape and pain, and she told me about a place called Warfield Church. She was brave enough to reach out. She was God's gift to me. She was a signpost. That was a time, that was a moment in my life where we got to choose. And we turned to the light and we went to Warfield Church. Surprised as it was in the middle of nowhere, but it was full. That was good. And the rest, they say, is history. That was 22 years ago. And that's when we joined the Warfield community, and we've been part of it ever since, apart from a little bit when we went to Switzerland, but we actually came back to Bracknell. So when I see those houses being built at Woodhurst Park, I think about the people who are making plans to come here. I think about the young women that may be getting married, thinking about their first home, the young people who are maybe pregnant for the first time. And I know, we all know, don't they, that it won't just be births and marriages, there will be deaths, there will be unexpected tragedies. And I'm committed to this Warfield community because I want to belong to a church that treated me like I was treated. It took a brave person to reach out to me, and that changed my life. It changed our life. I want to be part of a church that's committed to serving God and extending God's kingdom here in this community, in this area. And I want to be part of a church that is willing to take a risk, even when we don't know the outcome and it might go wrong. I want to be part of a church that has a heart for the lost, that cares about the people coming to Woodhurst Park. And it's not just the people that's coming to Woodhurst Park, is it? We all live in communities, and down your street, I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't know about Jesus. So it's our neighbours. So John and I, we're in for building or helping God's build his kingdom here in Warfield and North Bracknell. But 22 years ago when I joined the church, I never really gave it a second thought. How does it happen? You just rock up, don't you? The chairs are there, the lights are on, the coffee's served. I just enjoyed myself. And it took me a while before I realized, actually, there's a lot of housekeeping that goes on in churches. There's a lot of planning and there's a lot of resources that are needed. And finances are one of those resources. And it's my job for now to be the chair of finance. And did you notice I said for now? So You know, because you've got to share the fun around. Let's face it. You put me off my stride now. So I'm here, Chair of Finance, helping us figure out what we've got, what we need to fulfill what we believe God is giving us as a community, what he's asking us to do. When you go, you'll get a vision booklet, and I've written about it in there. But so I just want to give you a few highlights. So if you've heard me talk before, I'm quite keen on this idea of two pots of giving. So we can have the first slide now. We've got unrestricted giving pot, and we've got restricted giving. Unrestricted, we get to spend on whatever we want, keeping the lights, the coffee, the salaries, all that sort of stuff. Restricted giving comes in for a particular purpose. So you saw this slide last year, and I've added a little bit to it. The blue line is the unrestricted giving. The red line is the restricted giving. So when we reordered Warfield Church, we had gift days. That was a call for restricted giving, and you rose to that call, and the restricted giving came in. But you can probably see on the graph what happened to our unrestricted giving. It started to go down. That's bad news for us, because we've still got all the day-to-day costs that we ever had. So in 2013, 14, we put pay to gift days, and we introduced giving days. And you can see what happened to the line that you responded. The giving days were about unrestricted income, and the income started to go back up, which is great news. And it's only third week in January, but the figures are telling me that we've had an increase of about 30,000 in unrestricted giving in 2015. So thank you very much for that. Okay, next slide. Let's think about the expenditure. So I've also been having a look at our expenditure. And I think, again, it's quite helpful to think of it in two pots, fixed costs and variable costs. Fixed costs, as the name suggests, are fixed. So once we decide to go that way, it's actually quite hard to undo it. We can, but it'll be painful. Variable costs, as the name suggests, there's more flexibility. So we've been working hard at reducing our variable costs. And the next slide shows us that two of our fixed costs, our biggest two fixed costs, are the costs of our minister's costs, which is otherwise known as parish share, and our staff costs. So the staff cost is the red line at the top, and the blue line is the parish share at the bottom. We have three vicars, and the parish share reflects, the increase reflects the fact that we have gone from one to three vicars, so that's why it's on a steep going up. And that, to us, translates to an extra $25,000 a year for 4 years. So we're in the third year of that. So, what about now? So the next slide. My motto is, you don't spend what you haven't got. So I apply that to my personal life, to our finances, and we always have done. Income's got to equal expenditure, hasn't it? Because if it doesn't, we're in a mess. And so we've got a balancing act to do to keep that in a line. So as we go through this, we're going to see the imbalance appear. So if we look at our first of our fixed costs, there's our minister's costs coming in at $150,000. Now, don't forget, they're going to go up again next year by $25,000. The next one is our staff costs. Our staff cost is our biggest cost. We've then got we've got our mission. So mission, we are committed as a community to giving 10% of our unrestricted giving away. And do you remember I said over recent years that unrestricted giving had gone down, but we held it flat, okay? So be proud. Even though it went down, we held it flat. So I think we can be proud that we have continued to give outward on our mission. And then we've got our premises costs. We have two buildings. One's a very old building. They need heat, light, repairs, and all that sort of stuff. We also have rental things that we need to pay. Next, we start our... So those first four are fixed. Yeah, we can't change them without pain. Then we move on to our variable costs, which is our office admin, the running costs of the admin. We've also got some ministry costs. So what we try and do in Warfield is this is our day-to-day, well, not day-to-day, it's our Sunday costs. It's the costs of running our Sundays and the costs of running the stuff that we put on in the week. And then we just have a little bit of other, which I'm sure you don't want to know about. Okay, so that comes to 542,000. It's a big number, isn't it? So let's see how we get on with our income. Now, what I want you to remember is actually that this budget we set in October 2015. So we have to do quite a lot of guesswork to try and figure this out. Things will change, okay? And the biggest thing is we don't know what our income is going to be. That depends on us. So the 440,000 there is based on what came in last year, or it's based on what we thought was going to come in October, okay? So we're in guesswork. 440,000. We also have some other income. So that other income, we have a house that we rent out. So there's some rental income in there. We also try to, anything that we put on midweek, so third person, the marriage course, relentless, all the kids stuff midweek, we charge so that it's neutral, okay? So that's what that's there. And then the final bit, the ministry, that is the... In the other costs, that's that bit. In the other costs, we charge for weddings and funerals, okay? So you can all do your marketing and get a few more of those in for us, and that'll help. Okay, so what do you see about that seesaw? Does it balance? Doesn't balance, doesn't it? So what it's telling us is that we need additional income of 53,000, okay? Is it coming? Oh, yeah, there it is. 53,000. So, how are we going to do it? How are we going to make it balance? So, we've got a challenge ahead of us, haven't we? And the way I see it, there's three options. If you know any more, please come and talk to me. And I'm going to do them in reverse order because I'm doing the least preferred first, okay? So, we can use reserves. What does reserves mean? It's a posh word for savings. So, we are in the fortunate situation of having cash savings so we can use them. But all of us know, do you like to use your savings to pay your electricity bill? Or do you Tesco shop? Not really. It's not a great model, is it, really? So we can, they're there, but third place. Second place is cutting costs. Do you remember fixed, variable? Variable, there's not much left there. There's a bit, but not much. Fixed costs are the big costs, the big four. We can change them, but it will be painful. So I'm not keen on that one either. So I think my preferred option is to increase giving, okay? And we get to control that. We all get to be part of buying into that idea. So on the next slide, we see the projected income, okay? So as I said, we had a strategy plan, which was over 4 years, which involved the three vicars coming in and then us getting our income aligned with that. So we need to increase our giving by 50,000 a year. Okay, it sounds a big number, doesn't it? But let me break it down for you, and it really isn't as big as it looks. So what happens is that George Osborne also likes to join in with Warfield Church as well. So if you are a taxpayer, you can tick a box, and he will give us 25% of what you give. So the real cash for us is 40 grand, okay? 40 grand, and we'll get 10 grand from David and George, which is great. Bless them. Okay, if we break it down, that's just over 3,000. So 3,333 a month. Still sounding quite big, isn't it? Break it down further. There are 600 people on the Warfield Church electoral roll. We only need 140 people to increase their monthly giving by £25 a month. And that imbalance corrects itself, £25 a month. So we get to choose. It's in our hands. We get to choose what happens to the seesaw. It's down to us. And I want to tie it back to the beginning. I want to tie it back to 22 years ago, where Warfield Church reached out to me. It took a brave person to reach out to me. And it changed my life. Before that point, there was planning going on. There were committed, obedient Christians in Warfield Church that used their time, their talent, and their treasure to build a church that reached out to the lost like me. And I want to be a part of a church that will reach out to the people coming to Woodhurst Park and the people who are already here that don't know Jesus yet. So it's our turn. Mark.
I'm just going to go to the chair, and what George did, he took all those dollar bills and he took a chance, a ridiculous chance really. He put all the dollar bills in an envelope and he sent them to the headmaster of Princeton College and wrote a little note saying, "I'm coming to see you." And a week later, he took his only ever day off from the railroad and he made his way to Princeton College. And he arrived at these enormous gates that were designed to be intimidating, and he went through them. And he came to this enormous door that was designed to be intimidating, and he went through them. And he came to the receptionist who was designed to be intimidating, and he said, "I'm George. I've come to see the headmaster." And she said, "No, you haven't. Where's your appointment?" He said, I sent a letter. She said, "If your name is not in my book, you are not getting past this point." And she looked down her list, and there, to her absolute horror and great annoyance, was George's name written by the headmaster with a little note alongside that said, "If George comes, show him in immediately." Well, she was furious. How dare he write in her book? But she took him and she showed him into the headmaster's office, and he looked around and there were more books in here than he thought actually existed in the entire planet. A table, a chair. He sat, he waited. The headmaster of Princeton College came in. George didn't know whether he should stand, whether he should sit, or whether he should just simply bow down and worship. But he looked across the table at the headmaster, and the headmaster fumbled for a few moments and then said, "Right, George, yes, you sent me an envelope." And he opened his top drawer and he took out the envelope and he places it on the table. "You sent me this, right. George, I can't take it." And he pushes it back across the table. And George doesn't know what to do. How many times does he have to get up? But headmaster, I and now there's tears running down his cheeks. I know it's not enough. But headmaster, if you'll just let me come, if you'll let me just come and do one term, then I'll go away and I'll work again, and then I'll come back and do the next, and I'll go away and I'll come back and I'll do the next, and do the maths. It would take him about 48 years to get through Princeton College. The headmaster wasn't used to people crying on him. He took his handkerchief out and he passed it across and he said, "Dry your eyes. George, I don't think you understand." He said, "Headmaster, I do. I just want to come. I want to come to Princeton. Ever since I can remember, want to do anything. I want to be a lawyer." No, George, you don't understand. "George, do you know somebody called Mr. Spencer?" George said, "Well, yes, I do, sir. I made him a milky drink. He rode on my train." At this, the headmaster of Princeton College laughs out loud. He said, "George, it probably isn't completely accurate to say that he rode on your train. I think it's probably more accurate to say you work on his." "George, Mr. Spencer owns the railroad. And George, about 2 years ago, he came and he sat where you're sitting right now. And George, he wrote a check. And he said to me these words, 'If somebody called George comes through those doors and sits in this chair, he gets this check. It'll cover his tuition for 4 years at Princeton College.' And then he added this: 'If he doesn't come, he's never to hear about this conversation, and you can use the money for whatever you want.' And he came. He came. He got up. He made it through. It's not easy to get up all the time. But if we do, we will discover that somebody with infinite resources made the whole jolly thing possible for us. It's all there, sitting before us, if we can just get up and walk through. Oh, I have to tell you the end of the story. 4 years later, graduates, lawyer. Several years after that, they make him a high court judge. Several years after that, they make him part of the Supreme Court of the United States of America. The very first black person to get there. And all because an 8-year-old girl taught him to read and write. And he just kept going. It's an extraordinary story. David, who? I have to say, there was an awful lot of movement. I hope we disqualified those.
Where's he going?
Well, the best person has left. I don't know what to do with that.
Seriously?
You trained in this ministry.
No. I can see him. Sorry. Still here.
Well, that's good news.
Andy Kolpers, he wins everything.
Oh, Andy Kolpers. Andy Kolpers, come to the front, quick. Come to the front with your prize.
Independent School of the Year. Yeah.
Come on, quick, come. It's just because the reality is you never, ever, ever, ever get my messages unless I reinforce them with chocolate. And so the thing is this, Warfield Church. Nobody likes the people at the back, really. Warfield Church, you think that it's all about this, and oh, just come over here. See, you get it? See, you think God has this stored up for us, and we're all fighting and trying to get through, and because God's got, and it's this, abundantly more than we could ever think. God's got this, more than you can ask or imagine. God has this. And so you're chasing after this, but if we can just send the envelope and turn up in that study at Princeton, if we can just get through Ziklag, the great God of the universe has abundance ready for us. David, you have to find the second best person later. All right, it's now turned into pantomime. Let's close our eyes and pray for a moment. Help us, Father. Bad bunch. Help us, Father, to engage with you. Father, we'll be here again in October. By then, we'll know if we walk through Ziklag or not. We want to pray more.